Bioethics and the Kenya Peace Initiative. Joining us to talk about it on the Bioethics Channel is Terry Rozell, the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. The Bioethics Channel is a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Terry, this was both a professional and a personal endeavor for you. Give us a brief overview, if you would, please, on how you became involved and how you ended up taking this trip to Kenya.
East Africa as an area of interest is personal in that my wife was born and raised in Tanzania, which is next door to Kenya, and she spent a good part of her childhood in boarding schools in Kenya as well. So we had begun talking about returning for her, a return to East Africa. I had never been there, along with our four young adult children, to see where their mother had been born and raised and went to school.
And then this evolved as things turned out. You had a situation with a student where you could combine both the personal and the professional. Talk to us about this student.
I teach also at Central Baptist Theological Seminary a course in Christian ethics, and in that course I require students to invest a minimum of 20 hours in a justice-making project somewhere in the world to try to make a difference for justice, peace. And mentioned to a student who is a Kenyan, Wilson Katungu, just over a year ago, mentioned our desire to travel to East Africa, and that led to further conversation with him and with a global peace teacher by the name of Dan Buttry, a friend of ours, and to planning a project whereby we could perhaps address violence that occurs in Kenya. Has since 1992 around elections.
Tell us a little bit more about Wilson. His is an interesting story, is it not?
Wilson Katungu came to the U.S. about 9 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago, as a visitor, and discovered that when he came here, he could get a GED. He had only a primary school education and was a car mechanic in Nairobi. Came to visit a friend, learned he could get a GED here. He studied for 3 months and completed a GED successfully, learned that he could, with a GED, go to university. And so he enrolled at the University of Kansas in a business degree program. Finished at Park University a few years later, learned that with an undergrad degree he could enroll in a graduate program, and did so with the intent to become a minister in the Presbyterian Church of Kenya. And that's where I met him, is in a graduate program in theology.
He was doing all of this while family was back in Kenya, correct?
He had three daughters back in Kenya. Eventually his wife joined him, and they had another daughter here in the States. And he was able to obtain a student visa, of course, to study here, but did so at great sacrifice so as to take an opportunity to get the education that he was unable to get in Kenya due to lack of economic opportunity.
I get the impression that as you kept working with Wilson, the ideas and what actually came to be kind of grew like topsy, and the final project was probably far from what you imagined initially.
It was and is, because it's ongoing. Wilson has, we've discovered some amazing natural gifts at organization and bringing people together. And the ideas that he had were worthy ideas for peace and reconciliation, for the prevention of violence and harms that come to people from violence. So Wilson would be talking to people that he was gathering back in Kenya, because he returned late last year to Kenya, And he would call me and email and say, I think we should really do this. And then he'd make his case for it, like a good ethicist. And I would listen to his case and argue a bit. And we would try to ascertain how much money it would cost and where that would come from. And in the end, I would say, Wilson, let's do it. And the project grew.
You mentioned earlier that there had been a lot of violence around elections starting since 1992. And so it has been a violent and deadly place with a lot of people being killed, unfortunately. Talk to us a little bit about that and what you found there and what you know about the situation there.
In general, Kenyans are peaceful people and lovely, wonderful, generous people who, by and large, live together in peace. But there were inequities and disparities that developed over the course of colonization. And when colonization ended in the 60s, there was an issue of land redistribution. So what we've been learning in the process of working with the Kenya Peace Initiative is that land was redistributed in the 60s and 70s from white folk who had been there and taken land initially from Africans who had lived there for generations, millennia. And then when white folk left after independence, land was redistributed to those Kenyans who had more resources and had economic advantage. But that wasn't always to the communities of people from whom the land had originally been taken. And so that has never been entirely resolved as a matter of ethnic, tribal difference. And in 1992, when the Kenyan government shifted to a multi-party system, some of the parties fell along ethnic and tribal lines, and some of the politicians then fanned the flames of discontent and even hatred that had been simmering for years around land distribution, redistribution, and other economic issues of resource allocation. And some politicians, we're told, used that then to benefit their own election chances, but with the end result of violence that resulted in the deaths of thousands of people, the burning of thousands of homes and businesses, occurring every 5 years when national elections come up since 1992.
So with the Kenya Peace Initiative, you went over there and met your friend Wilson, and what were some of the things that you did?
We focused our efforts in what's been called the hot spot of the intertribal violence, which is in the Nakuru County in the Molo District, all in the Rift Valley region of Kenya. We many of us throughout the world read of an atrocity on January 1st, 2008, which was roughly in this area, Eldoret in particular. And the atrocity that happened there that we read about and were just appalled by was the burning of a church with many people in it, including women and children. One tribal group burning the church that housed as a refuge women and children of another tribal group. Given that, we hoped to go and participate with Wilson and a steering committee that he had gathered from throughout that part of Kenya, leaders from really 15 different areas, all centering in Molo town of the Molo district in Nakuru County. We didn't know how what would happen once we gathered, when he gathered that steering committee. But as they gathered, members of different tribal groups, men and women, clergy, civic leaders, and others, they came up with a plan. And what we implemented was their plan. That included a conference, a four-day conference with 54 of these leaders gathered from 15 areas, multi-tribal, different ages, men and women.
And these were competing tribes as well, right?
These were people from different tribes and tribal, especially the two main tribal groups, Kikuyu and Kalenjin, who had been involved in ethnic violence in the past. So, yes, these were leaders from two different tribal groups, some of whom had not sat down together like this before. Eating and sleeping together in a hotel, learning together, praying together, since this was a faith-based group, multi-faith. There were different groups represented, but since 80% of the Kenyan people affiliate with Christian churches, it was a group of Christians, but Catholic, Pentecostalists, Presbyterians, Baptists, and others.
So you had a conference, you had an activity in a stadium of some kind too, right?
The conference started by all of us gathering at the hotel on a Wednesday morning, the first day of the conference, and going by minivans, buses, to an area about 2 hours' drive away over not very good roads. And this was really the center of tribal violence in the past election, 2007-2008. Kamwara was the area, and we went to the Lakuenda IDP camp. IDP means internally displaced persons, a refugee camp. We went there to build two homes. This was a part of the project that Wilson and his committee had come up with, and eventually I was persuaded and said, let's do it.
Somehow it just happened.
So we went to go build two very simple homes to help two families, one Kikuyu, one Kalenjin, get out of tents that they'd been living in with their families for several years when their homes had been burned down in the violence of 2007-2008. So we all went to go participate in the building of two homes. And then we went from there to the Kamwara Secondary School and gathered with 200 students and their teachers and headmaster and the parents, community members, and then conference participants, and we sat down together, heard speeches from civic leaders and school leaders and faith community leaders about the violence that occurred and saying never again. We planted a peace garden on the school grounds, 100 seedlings that the students had prepared the soil for, and then joined together with us in planting a peace garden that they will tend to be reminded daily for years to come that the violence that occurred should never again happen. And then we went back to the hotel that night and studied together for the next 3 days about nonviolent responses to conflict and to conflict transformation.
What kind of effect do you hope this will have in Kenya?
I should say first that we concluded the conference with this event in the stadium. We went from hotel in Elbergon, a little burg outside of Molo town, and we went into Molo to the soccer stadium on Sunday afternoon of this week in June 2011. We joined other people there in Molo who had large banners and a motorcade of motorcycles starting from two points in the city and marching together with a Salvation Army band leading the charge.
Oh, that had to be quite a sight.
It was quite a sight, yes. Amazing. and marching through Molo all the way to the stadium. A thunderstorm, hailstorm came through just as we were approaching the stadium, and torrential rains, and we thought, it's all over. But what happened is we huddled together under umbrellas and a shelter in the stadium and waited it out for an hour, hour and a half, with the band playing and people dancing in the rain because there's been drought there. And so this was seen actually as a blessing. When the rain stopped, the speeches started, the singing began, the dancing continued, and children spoke poetry about peacemaking. There were speeches about never again will we enter a violent phase in our history. That experience was amazing and led to the hope that we have, which I think is a reasonable hope, that this will actually lead to prevention of violence next year when elections occur again, probably in August of 2012. National media were present and published articles in Nairobi about the events at Kamora Secondary School and the Molo Stadium. So people in high places learned about this, and the response has been very positive. Kenyans want peace. They do not want violence. It's bad for the country when there's violence in Molo. And so there is reasonable hope that this will actually be a significant part of other efforts that are also going on to have a peaceful election next year.
How does this effort fit within a bioethics framework?
Bioethics is not only about addressing harms that have been done or about addressing end-of-life care, research. It's also about prevention. It's about public health, and a part of public health is prevention of violence. Violence leads to injuries. It leads to death, premature death. It leads to psychological harms. The conference that we held was attended by a government psychologist who was a member of one tribal group. His work actually is primarily on a daily basis counseling members of the other tribal group, and he has been very gracious in doing so because he and his family experienced a tremendous violence and loss in the last election from members of the other tribal group. He is also a pastor, and he remembers getting a call from children who were hiding in a forest. They have their cell phones are very prevalent in the developing world, and he received a call, and the call was from one of the youth in his church saying, there are 18 of us hiding in the forest. Please come and get us, Pastor. So he drove his Land Rover into the thick of violence, with homes and businesses burning and mobs injuring and killing people, and rescued 18 children. He also discovered that his parental home had been burned. His brother had been captured by a mob and his eye gouged out. Mm. His father previously had been captured and beaten and later died of his injuries. His mother died of a broken heart probably within months after that. And he could say and did say on videotape, an interview that will be edited and put up on YouTube with 20 some other interviews, that this was a very, very important event for him to come and to experience healing himself because of the psychological trauma that he himself experienced as a psychologist due to the violence and loss in the election violence of 3 years ago. bioethics is about healing, helping to heal people and addressing harms that have been done and then preventing harms from happening again. These are challenges and opportunities. And part of the effect on me is to ponder what else can I do.
Terry Rozelle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.